It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN in St. Louis with Cardinal World Series champ Brad Thompson and Chris Ronji. I'm Randy Carricker, and ESPN's Michael Jordan documentary, The Last Dance, debuts Sunday night at 8 o'clock St. Louis time on ESPN. And Will Wennington played with Michael for the last three of those championship seasons and joins us now on the Braun and Crouppen Celebrity Line on 101 ESPN. Will, thanks so much for taking some time with us. I know that, man, these must be busy times for you. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I mean, it's, you know, we're all excited and hoping and looking forward to this, you know, Last Dance documentary, because we're all asking ourselves, what actually happened that we didn't even know about, even though we were there?
I feel like that happens way more often than people think. I think that everybody feels like, hey, if you're on this team and you're around it, you know every aspect of it. It really is amazing all the inner workings of a team, and specifically maybe an individual that is wired the way that Michael is.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we were on a team, but also when you're on a team with older players, we also have individual lives, so it's not like we're spending every hour of every day together. So there are a lot of things that happen that we don't know about or we don't necessarily talk about. We learn secondhand ourselves. But, you know, the one thing we did do was we respected each other. And that's one of the things that we, you know, as we talk about older players that played then, we have our Get Off My Lawn segment. We talked about the importance of respectability and respect each other more so than being concerned about being each other's friend. We can worry about that later.
So when you're on that team and you've got the older players, like you said, and that was a great and historically great team, string of teams that you were on with those mid-90s Bulls, there are so many extra people around that you don't even, I would think that you don't even realize are there. I mean, you know there's a crowd of people, a sea of people. Did you even know that there was somebody who had a camera on just about everybody at all times?
Oh, I mean, that was commonplace. I mean, basically, we were a reality show. There were so many cameras, so many people. I've heard somebody compare it to the Bulls' first three-peat was the Beatles, but the Bulls' second three-peat was the Beatles and the Rolling Stones together.
Will Wennington with us in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN, and you played on multiple teams. You played with a lot of teammates, and you look at teammates through different prisms. And what we're hearing most about Michael is we want the question answered. What sort of a teammate was he? So from your perspective, Will, what sort of a teammate was Michael Jordan?
Well, he was a much better teammate when he came back from playing baseball because of the fact that you know, first of all, he's the most competitive human being that you'll ever hear about, compete against, compete with, regardless of what it is, golf, basketball, tiddlywinks, cards. He wanted to win at all costs. But at the same time, after he went through baseball, he also realized that, you know, certain guys are just better for certain reasons. And sometimes no matter how hard you practice, no matter how much time you invest, some guys just aren't going to be as good as others. But that doesn't mean that they can't be a vital part of the whole team, meaning that we need each other for specific reasons to do what we're trying to do. That's win a championship. And that's why there's five guys on the floor at a time, not one like a single golfer or a tennis player or a swimmer, you know, doing individual events. We need to figure out how to come together as a team, and most notably, you know, Michael needs to figure out how to be a leader but also be accepting of the mistakes that us average players are going to make.
So do you think getting humbled in baseball, is that what you're getting at? Getting humbled in baseball kind of changed his perspective a little bit?
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, he's out there playing with, you know, kids straight out of high school. He's got some kid on the mound that's 19 years old, and, you know, he's out there going against a guy that's not even shaving yet, can't even have a drink yet. But yet that guy's putting him down in three pitches, and he's walking back to the mound being like, holy cow, what just happened?
Now, I think that this happens oftentimes for star players, and Michael Starr burns brighter than pretty much anybody else is out there. But sometimes you realize a little bit later in your career, maybe to your point, it was baseball that kind of did it to him, but you realize that, you can still have other aspects. So maybe being a better teammate or listening more or being more helpful, whatever that is, and not lose that competitive edge. Do you feel or have you seen in your experiences, Will, over the years, that guys just are so fearful of losing something that they never change?
A little bit, but that's also being confident in yourself that if you are willing to make a change, that things will actually get better. I mean, that's not just Michael. That's everybody. You know, you got to this level by being a certain way mentally, by doing things a certain way physically, but also having certain beliefs, most notably in yourself. But at the same time, are you willing to take a step back, open yourself up, accept some criticism, and realize that, hey, I need, in order to get much better, I need to step out of my comfort zone. And that's everybody, regardless of how good they are.
How often did it happen? My guess is it's frequent that he's on the floor, whether, you know, alongside you, and he does something, and, you know, you're in the moment, you're trying to do a job for yourself, so it's kind of difficult to, you know, be a spectator. But were there times where you found yourself being one with him?
Oh, absolutely, and that was the hard part, because if you found yourself being a spectator at the wrong time, and then he elects to throw a pass to you or something happens, you're going to have Spalding going across the front of your face because you're thinking, hey, I want to watch this guy. He's about to do something spectacular. And all of a sudden you leave the moment and then you put your hands down at your side or you're not in, you know, in the ready position. And all of a sudden you're like, whoops, I got to remember, I can't do that. I can go back and watch the film later.
Will Weddington is with us on 101 ESPN, and ESPN is going to have their Michael Jordan documentary, Last Dance. It starts on Sunday night. And, Will, we had kind of a slice of that superstardom when we had the opportunity to travel with Mark McGwire for a little while. But what was it like getting off a bus in a road city when you got to a hotel?
I mean, circus is an understatement. The best part was, and, you know, we used to joke about this when we would get, as you talked about, get to a visiting city, get on the bus, take the bus to the hotel. As the bus pulls up to the hotel, there's, you know, 300, 400 people outside hoping to get autographs. You know, Michael gets off the bus, all 400 people, 300 people go with him, and the other guys just walk straight into the hotel untouched, like Michael's going to stand there and sign every single one of those autographs. That we always found that as humorous. I mean, he may sign one or two, but they're all willing to take that chance that maybe they're that one or two people that actually get his autograph, and I'm assuming that they feel like their life will be changed forever.
Let's just hope it was. You know, maybe their lives were changed. Let's hope for them. Hey, Will, I was just thinking, man, there are so many benefits to being that guy, right? Like let's start with $1 billion. Having the career that he did and all of that. But just the stuff that you're talking about, like the circus, which is an understatement around every aspect of his life. Did you ever pick up on the fact that that might wear on him at some point?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's just, you got to remember, on the road, he hardly ever went out. People had to come into him. You know, he always had a suite on the road, so people would come visit him instead of him going out because of how difficult it was to go out. You know, I always tell this story that was relayed to me one of his teammates back in the first repeat. You know, because back in the early 90s, the Bulls were still traveling via commercial. I think it was United, because they were one of the big sponsors, and I think still are. I think the arena currently is called the United Center, where they play at the present moment. But even back then, I think United is one of their sponsors. So, you know, every team back then, outside of Detroit, used to travel commercial. So you'd have to drive to the airport, walk through security, go to the gate, do all the same stuff. Well, as a man, what do 99% of does every man do when he gets off a plane? as he's walking down through the airport, he goes to the bathroom, right? Well, as a team, you go in, Michael goes in. Well, Michael would always walk into the stall and go to the bathroom instead of just standing at the urinal. And one time he went in there, and I guess the guy thought he was going to be in there for a while, so he reached underneath the stall with a pen and a piece of paper and was like, yo, man, you're going to be in there for a while. Can you sign this for me?
Amazing.
Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, my God. And you never had anything like that happen to you, right?
No, but, you know, you always had people. I mean, you would be, I mean, at times you weren't expecting something and somebody could pop out behind a building, from behind a car, from behind a tree, and literally scare the crap out of you. And all they were doing was just wanting to get an autograph. But the way they approached you and you didn't see them coming was startling.
You know, I imagine it's probably the same for LeBron now and, you know, was for Kobe when he was playing. But you know, going on the road, obviously you get the attention from everybody who can't wait to see those players play. But I have been told that I never got the opportunity to go see any of the 90s Bulls teams in person. But I've been told, and you can't get the effect on TV, but when they make the announcement, the player introductions, and they would say, from North Carolina, and the place would be, you couldn't hear in there. Did you find it to be that way, where it was just impossibly loud when they announced Michael Jordan's name?
Well, you knew what they were saying, but you could never hear it. And, you know, it was just electric would be an understatement. But the one thing I also say is that, you know, it was kind of interesting when we traveled on the road. Literally, the guy would get a standing ovation on the road as well. And we always joked that they wanted to see Michael score 60 and the Bulls lose.
Right. Will Weddington with us on 101 ESPN. Hey, Will, I want you to give us your best, or at least your most notable in your mind, Michael Jordan practice story, because I'm sure that'll be a big part of the documentary, how intense, you mentioned his competitiveness, how intense he was even in practice. What's the one that you remember most?
Well, one of the things that we all used to talk about is being a competitive player. You know, one of the things that Michael wasn't necessarily a leader in the sense that he would pull a player aside and have a conversation with them and break it down for them and tell them what they need to do. He kind of was a leader from a hard ass standpoint. And occasionally, when he thought that, you know, Scotty was getting a little too full of himself, he would ask Phil to put him and Scotty on opposite teams so that they could guard each other in practice. And let's not forget, this is, you know, we used to always practice. We used to go pretty hard. We didn't necessarily go long, but we used to go pretty hard. And we knew that when Phil's like, hey, one of the two guys, Scotty or Michael, turn your jersey over, we knew that, all right, well, we know what's about to happen. Both teams are going to run a 1-4 flat, which is the other four guys stand around, and Michael and Scotty go one-on-one and talk a lot of trash. And we obviously know who won every single time.
That's great.
I read a story about how you blocked one of Michael's shots in practice.
I mean, it's basketball. It's the one thing you're going to block. Everybody's going to get their shot blocked, but also at the same time, everybody's going to get dunked on. So, yeah, I blocked a shot in practice before, but he also dunked on me before. But, you know, that's just the game of basketball in itself. I know a lot of people want to make a big deal out of it, but, you know, it's just – it's the game. It's just – you know, it's kind of like, I guess, as Brad will attend to, every once in a while a hitter closes his eyes and swings and hits a home run off somebody. He just like shakes his head and doesn't really say anything. He runs around the bases and acts like he meant to do it and gets his ass back in the dugout as quickly as possible.
I'd like to believe that's all the home runs that I gave up was just dumb luck. That's what I like to believe at this point. Hey, what was that relationship between Phil Jackson and Michael Jordan like? And I'd love to hear your relationship with Phil as well. I would just think that having somebody like that on your team where the spotlight is on him all the time, like, that guy would be hard to corral, in my opinion.
But he, in Phil's case, he wasn't. I mean, Phil held him accountable. Phil wasn't afraid to do that. You know, in video sessions, you know, Phil would stop the tape and show Michael making mistakes or not making the proper rotation, or, hey, you know, this is, we're a team here. Everybody makes mistakes, but we're only strong as the weakest link. But sometimes if you're the weakest link, you got, there's things you got to work on as well. You're not perfect. But they also had a great relationship off the floor, which helped develop that relationship on the floor.
So earlier this week, Shaq was on SportsCenter, and he was asked about you know, the documentary coming up, and he was asked, what about your 2000 through 02 team, you know, the really great Lakers team with him and Kobe, and could you have beaten the Bulls at their peak in the 90s? And he said, of course, yes, easily. What do you think of that?
Well, what is he going to say? No? You know, I'll disagree with what he has to say. I thought that, you know, our team, and when I say team, top to bottom, was probably better. But, like, you know, we had better individual players at certain positions, and they had better individual players at certain positions. You know, I don't know what their chemistry was like behind the scenes, but, you know, one of the things we always talk about, let's be realistic here. I mean, guys, you know, it's really, you can talk about the numbers all you want and compare the numbers, but until you actually get out there and play, you really don't have the answer. It's a seven-game series, and I know that I would have loved to have played because I would have loved to have seen the outcome.
And I, we all were talking about you guys' 72-win team and the 73-win Golden State team, and obviously different eras, we'll never know. But I think most of us that were watching the Bulls during that era and watched the intensity with which you guys played defense and the way you guys played the game, if you were playing by your rules, I think you guys handle Golden State pretty well.
Well, honestly, I think we beat them either way. Because I think it's easier for players that played in the 90s to adapt to the way the game's being played now than it is for the players that play now to adapt to the rules and the way the game was played in the 90s. Are they better shooters? Yeah. Is it a different game? Absolutely. But who do you think is still going to be the best player on the floor when it's all said and done? I think we'll all agree that Michael will still be the best player. Mm-hmm. And then let's go, number, who's going to be the second best player? You can argue and say, well, maybe it's Steph, maybe it's Clay, or maybe it's Scotty. So, you know, I think that's where the argument starts. And then again, you got to start taking everything as a whole, you know, because, hey, you can have a great starting five, but if you don't have a solid bench, you're in trouble.
So are you going to be texting back and forth with some of your old teammates during this documentary and say, you believe this crap? I didn't know he did that.
There's a possibility, but then that means I'd have to put my beverage down and use both hands to text. I'm not that good yet to do it all with one hand.
Oh, I think you could figure it out. You're an athlete, man.
So either that or just hand it to my wife and have her text for me.
There you go. Hey, Will, we're looking forward to it. We really appreciate you taking some time here. Where are you living now?
So I live in Chicago, out in the suburbs. You know, I still do the radio with Chuck Swirsky for all the Bulls games. So, you know, I've been, and our season would have just ended, our regular season would have just ended this week. So, obviously, I'm missing basketball, and I'm missing sports in general like everybody else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, let's also be clear, you know, certain things that you remember in life, all right, and to, you know, let kind of, you know, blow Brad's ego up a little bit. I think, you know, I played basketball, went to St. John's, blah, 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 but to me, there's nothing better than going to a baseball game, getting a nice cold beverage and a pack of peanuts, and seeing an extra inning back and forth, and even a pitching duel as well, because it's just, to me, baseball, there's so much going on than just the pitcher throwing to the catcher. There's so many movements. There's so much going on in baseball that I think that people just don't understand. But it's a beautiful game. I understand basketball, football, they're a lot quicker. But I truly am a baseball fan at heart.
Yeah, and as you can imagine, here in St. Louis, we miss it badly. Will, take care of yourself. Enjoy the series, and we appreciate you taking some time with us today.
All right, I appreciate it, and like everybody else, looking forward to Sunday, and I'm also looking forward to the numbers. I'm curious, is this thing going to put up like Super Bowl-like numbers because everybody's, you know, locked at home and everybody's antsing for content? So that'll be interesting as well.
Yeah, no doubt. Take care and be safe.
All right, you got it. Thank you so much.
See you later, Will. Will Weddington, he was on those last three Bulls championship teams, joining us on 101 ESPN. Coming up, a big MME event coming up tonight, MLE, Major League Eating. Miki Sudo, the number one female eater in the world, joins us next on 101 ESPN.